Welcome to the Carpcast. Introducing the two biggest nods that don't use jobs. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your host, it's Mark and Jamie.
So hello and welcome to episode 24 of the Carpcast. How you doing, Mark?
Oh, not bad. You know, we're recording on a full belly.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, we usually rush home from work, it's straight upstairs, on with the equipment, and you know, this time we've not done that. It's been food first, and oh, it's a better feeling. You know, even though I want to go sleep because I'm old.
Yeah, I've got a food baby. Yes, this is episode 24. We were going to have this an all-female edition. We're going to cross-dress. We've got Bev Clifford, who works at Carp Talk, very famous father, Kevin Clifford, who's a media mogul in angling. Very interesting chat with Bev. We were going to... do 10 questions to other female anglers, which I've done. We've recorded a load of them. But by the time I'd recorded the fourth one today, I figured the same 10 questions getting answered over and over again would make for a boring show. So I think we'll have a new feature, which cues me to sing when we haven't got a jingle made for it, because we've just decided this.
dear me.
I know you love my singing.
No, I don't. Just get it over and done with.
well, we're not doing it right now. I'll do the singing when the feature comes.
But, no, you are torturing me.
Yeah, but we would like to encourage in a very male dominated sport. We would like to encourage girls. You know, I took my daughter fishing from 3 years old. She's now 15 and won't go near a fishing rod. But
that works.
Yeah, but I think it's a good thing. It's a good thing to take your kids fishing, girls or boys. And it shouldn't be just a male-dominated industry, because the sort of benefits you get from angling are for both, I think. You know, the serenity, the excitement of getting that screaming take. You know, I've been quite pleased with the interviews that I've done with various girls today, yesterday, and obviously Bev, we did on the bank at Cromwell. And I think we should have a girl power feature where we focus a girl in angling every week, and we'll ask them 10 questions just about fishing in general. And if you want to be on this feature, if you are a girl angler and would like to come on it, then send us a message on Facebook and a quick 5-6 minute chat, and we will interview you up.
You know, my wife's first question when we go in anywhere is, be it fishing or anything, is there a hot tub? That's why she's never been fishing. Well, yeah, priorities. Never actually come fishing with me. That is, her priority is a hot tub.
Some of them have, you know. You know those fishing lodges that you get, like they generally tend to be like well stocked lakes. Is that Cleveley Fisheries?
Yeah.
Up in the northwest Lancashire, they've got one. I don't know if they've got a hot tub in there, but they, you know, the ones that have like the wooden cabins on the side of the lake, like the really nice cabins. Yeah. I've seen some with hot tubs recently. I've seen an advert somewhere flashed up on Facebook or something for a fishy type holiday. But I'm a bit of a, like, I get excited about the sort of fishing I do. I need to have something significant to fish for, or it needs to be an out and out, like just a bit of fun with the kids type water. You know, it needs to be like the stuff in between I can't get excited about and don't really want to spend money on. And a lot of these lakes are kind of places that I wouldn't fish otherwise. So to have like, I'd rather just go on holiday to a logside cabin with no fishing and hot tubs and all the facilities, rather than go to a place where it's like mediocre fishing and a mediocre-ish, you know, lodge and hot tub. I don't know. I'm sure the right experience is out there for me, but I've not found it. But I've never been on that type of holiday, so my mind is open. You ever been to anything like that?
Yeah, it was actually mentioned on one of the earlier casts. You know, me and my wife, we had a week on, I can't remember the name of the little campsite now.
I remember now, yeah.
Yeah, it was in Brandersburton area of East Yorkshire anyway. you know, I'm going to remember and blurt it out randomly halfway through the recording now. But yeah, we had a lodge right at the side of the lake, had a hot tub. You know, I was actually sat in the hot tub with my rods out in the lake. And
wow.
I didn't catch anything, but it would have been a dilemma if I'd have got a run right then while we were just sat chilling in the hot tub. Do I just let it go or actually get out and deal with it?
Did you catch anything? I seem to remember the answer being no.
I think I had a tufty.
They don't count.
Well, that's all I caught this week on my brand new rods. I christened them with a tufty, and I think the curse of new rods has started with a blank, so my next carp could be a long way away.
Yeah, so when you get a bit of new equipment like that and you don't catch straight away, I always used to do it with nets, because obviously nets are fairly crucial to landing fish, as are rods, I guess.
Oh, yeah, unless you're good at tickling them.
I had a dream the other night that I wrestled a carp, actually. Oh, my word. Fishing's getting back in my bones. What's going on?
You've caught a lump, and that's it. Next year, you're going to be looking for some syndicate or, well, knowing you, just some no-fishing lake with a lump in. Not that I'm casting any aspersions on your poaching habits or conquests.
I don't like the word poaching. Guesting.
Guesting, is that better?
Yeah. All still illegal, right. Highly illegal. Don't recommend it, especially anywhere that I'm guesting. Stay away.
No, it cannot be condoned.
No, but I've not dreamt about a fish in years, and it must have been last night. It's just come back to me now. I mean, I never remember dreams, ever, and unless something significant or I wake up in the middle of a nightmare, but it's very rare. I sleep too soundly for that. But yeah, I remember there was a fish in the edge, and I forget what had happened, but I was fishing anyway, and there was this big fish in the edge, and rather than scoop it up, I just decided to dive in and wrestle it out, and I did. And I even remember the size of it, because I remember getting it out thinking, oh, it's not quite as big as I thought it was. It was like mid to upper 30 sort of thing. I was thinking it's like a mid 40 swimming about, and if I wrestle it out, would I have a picture with it when I haven't actually caught it? I remember thinking all this in the dream. Would I have a picture of that? I'd try and claim it.
Yeah, I think you would.
No chance. Never done that. But point being, it wasn't big enough. It's like 35. It's not worth. Not claiming.
Well, you know what? I had the last time I caught a 15 pounder, I had a picture with it. So a carp's a carp to me. I am that uber carp geek. But you mentioned dreams. Where I live, I'm not a million miles away as the crow flies from Yorkshire Wildlife Park.
Hmm.
And on a still quiet night, we can hear lions roar.
Yeah. Nice.
That plays with your dreams every now and then, I can tell you.
It's good. They must be loud.
My God, they are loud. You know, we're probably in a straight line. We're a mile and a half, you know, way plus. Yeah, the first time I heard it, we moved into this house. I'm loading the car up for, a day session. It's about 4 o'clock in the morning. I've got up early. And they're roaring that loud. I'm rushing to get my gear in the car and jump in and get myself. You don't want one of those hanging off your ankle. They sounded a lot closer than what they are.
There's a zoo in Blackpool, and I know some people that live in the houses that run down the side of it there, and they do comment that it's really weird going to bed, like hearing various, you know, you can hear the monkeys, it's like living in the jungle. You know, obviously there's lions and tigers and stuff there, and it must be nice, I think. Kind of lying in bed, listening to all that stuff, you know, when you can hear them clearly, because these houses are fairly close to the back of the zoo. Hearing them clearly, I think I'd like it.
Yeah, it is. I tell you what, it's, you know, a brilliant place as well. A plug for the Yorkshire Wildlife Park there, if anyone's listening from there and wants to advertise, get in touch. But, yeah, it did make me laugh last time. Well, two things. You know, we're going around, just me and my wife walking. There's like lions and giraffes and ducks.
Mm.
Next to the meerkats is a little enclosure, and it just says ducks and there's mallards in it. It's like, we can go anywhere and see them, put something useful there. But yeah, the wife did get annoyed with me there also, because I asked one of the staff where the push me pull ewes were. And this young member of staff didn't have a clue what I was on about, and she went off to check with someone else.
Like half of the listeners of this podcast, do what?
Yeah. Look it up. It's It was me being very childish as well. But it amused me.
Push you, pull you.
Push me, pull you. You know what they are, don't you?
No.
You don't know what a push me, pull you is?
I'm conjuring up images in my head, but no.
You know who Dr. Doolittle is?
No. Yeah, I'm aware of the film, but have I watched it? Possibly.
It's a push me, pull you. It's like a llama with a head at both ends. Hence the name, push me, pull you.
It's not what I was imagining, no. Yeah, I've not seen that film for a lot of years, so I get what you're trying to do. You're trying to entertain.
I was entertaining myself, and that's probably about the only person I have entertained.
Wow. Excellent.
I'm just looking at the notes for entertaining. What have I wrote there? Jamie has an old man hangover.
Oh, yeah. What happens, like, when I go fishing for a long period of time, just like I did this week? I mean, as you'll know from last week's show, I ended up hooking a pretty decent fish on Bluebell, fantastic fishery. And after losing it through user error, did not want to go home. You know, you automatically think that you might get another bite. No reason to think different, to be honest, except it went a lot colder. It was a totally different night. But I stayed an extra night. Long and short of it was, I did 5 nights on the bank, which is the longest I've fished in since probably the last time I went away for a week's holiday to France last year, maybe last November. So I was... I just had that urge to get wasted when I got home, as I always used to. And I used to like fish sort of 3-4 nights a week, every week religiously. I had the urge to go out partying when I came home. So that's what I did. It happened to be the boxing on Saturday night, where the most boring fight in the world gave Mr. Fury the world title against Klitschko. So I ended up having a few beers with my mate Dave.
And Dave.
Anyway, so 9 o'clock the next morning, I think I went to bed. So, yeah, I didn't get out of that bed until Monday. And then I felt like I shouldn't have got out of the bed until about yesterday, I think. So today's Thursday, yeah, Wednesday I was just... Well, today's the first day I actually feel motivated and bright. But, yeah, old man hangovers are no fun.
No, that's why I don't drink anymore. Or not that much to even get a hangover.
No.
Because also 9 years of driving for a living turns you into a proper lightweight. It's embarrassing.
Is that how long you were driving for, 9 years?
Yeah. You know, that's one thing we've not done in any of these podcasts, any of the old taxi stories I've got.
They're generally not fishing related, I would have thought.
No, nothing of a fishing related. Although, the only one I can think of that is, I'm taking a couple home and chatting to the fella, and, you know, we just get round to fishing. He's not a fisherman, but, you know, we're just chatting generally. And his missus, you know, just chirps in saying, you know, fishing's cruel, you shouldn't do it anyway, as they do, you know. They're both drunk. And my retort to that was, well, fishing's not cruel the way I do it. She says, what do you mean it's not cruel? I says, well, I'm crap, I never catch anything. Husband laughed, got a bollocking from the wife, and I didn't get a tip.
To take it, see pager.
Yeah. Yeah. No sense of humour, some people.
Shall we pay some bills?
I think we should. Let's go. What we got?
Long-time sponsor and supporter of the Carpcast, DNA Baits. DNABaits.com is the website where you can find all their post free deals. They're doing all the boilie packs, the 20 kilo ones, $149.99, delivered post free to your door. Any of their products, 10 kilo ones, $94.99, post free. There's a 5 kilo one at $59.99. Any of their boilies delivered post free to your door. That's £6 a key. There's a Zig deal. It's got like sticky sweet stuff in it. It's like £30 post free. It's got all the bits that you need. It's a 50 kilo deal. If you want to use 50 kilos of bait over the winter, it's only £320. But I do like the look of that sticky sweet hook bait dip. Looks really nice. Obviously, Zigs have got way more popular. I mean, the two bikes that I had on Bluebell last week were both on Ziggs. And I've been thinking about using them a lot more, a hell of a lot more. I've been using the Fox Zigger liners quite a bit. I like the Zig Bugs that Nash do, but I find some of the hooks are very fine on them, which are perfect for fishing for, you know, like mid-20s and stuff. And I've had fish to like 28 on Cromwell on the Zig Bugs. But I just like the fact with the Zigger liners that you can use, obviously, any hook.
I think a Zigger liner and a size 10 twister are a perfect marriage.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned the Zig Bugs. Mm. I think the hooks are just not big enough in them. And also, I think it's on the, not the gate, but it's on the uni they put them on.
That's right.
It's that interned point. I just cannot get on with them at all.
Yeah, I mean, I do like them. They were the first people to do the Zig Bugs as well, which, you know, I've always got some with me. I actually use them more for floater fishing because they're a lot finer. I trimmed them down a little bit and I've had loads of fish off the top.
Yeah,
I think they're really good for floater fishing. But for Ziggs, especially when I was fishing last week, for, you know, there's fish to 55 in that lake. Not that I want to be reminded, because it was a chunk that I lost. It was either a mid-30 hooked in the peck, or it was
a mid-50.
A mid-50 hooked in the mouth. I don't know. It was a good fish. There are a lot of good fish in there. I looked on the website for last November. I think there was seven fish caught last November, and two of them were 50s out of seven. So it's like, it's a big fish month as well. I don't know. Oh, forget about it anyway.
Yeah. But are we doing a DNA ad?
Yes, we are. But anyway, the Zig deal, it's like 2.5 kilos of spod mix, a bottle of the new sticky sweet mix, a pack of Fox Zigger liners, and it's all post-free for £30 delivered to the door. And of course, you can get 5% off anything that you order on the DNA Baits website, dnabaits.com. If you put a checkout code in when you go to pay for your stuff, put the code in CARPCAST5 and you will get an extra 5% off everything. And there's some fantastic stuff on there. And if they would like to send me a Zig deal, I would be extremely happy. But they support us enough anyway, so I think I'm just going to order one. Yep, you can call them. They have a mail order hotline, 01977 681 841, or dnabaits.com, and stick the code in CARPCAST5 for the discount.
What does DNA stand for, do you know?
That's a good question. We shall ask Mr. DNA.
I had an idea what it was. It's totally wrong, but the bait is that good, does it double Noddy's albums?
Double the Noddy's albums. It should be.
Yeah, I'll get my coat.
Yeah. I'm guessing it's just referring to the science of how good their boilies are. I would guess, but I don't know. But yeah, we shall ask that question. I know they listen to the podcast, so one of the people at Jason or somebody, message us and tell us where the name came from, because the public will now not be able to wait till next Friday to find the answer. They will not.
They will be in suspense.
Somebody else who sponsors the CARPCAST is Fat Fish Clothing. My old pal Lewis has a great clothing company. I'm actually a I wear their stuff. I'm a sponsored angler, or whatever you would like to call it these days, for DNA, and so I can vouch for the stuff personally. The hoodies.
Oh, Fat Fish, not her DNA.
Sorry. Yeah.
You've not had your alpha brain.
That is true, actually. I'm looking at here. That there is my brain tablets that I haven't taken today, because I've not been playing any poker as yet. Yes, Fat Fish Clothing, they do some great stuff. I can vouch for the hoodies and everything because I've worn them. They do some really cool old school t-shirts, hats, all the usual stuff. They are looking for distributors. If you have a shop and you want to add yourself to the list of shops that already supply their stuff, then you can get in touch with them at the website, fatfishclothing.co.uk. Fat is spelt P-H-A-T, Fish Clothing, fatfishclothing.co.uk. Do some really, really good stuff on there. And you can buy their stuff already from like Foster's of Birmingham, Johnson Ross, The Tackle Box, Yateley Angling, Jerry's of Wimbledon, Gone Fishing, Total Angling. Should be in on the net, actually, but I'm sure I heard the other day that Jerry's at Wimbledon's gone. I'm sure I saw Dave Magalese. Did Dave Magalese used to work there? I'm sure he made a post the other day saying that either they've closed or they're closing down, which is a great shame. That is a shop that's been around a long, long time. Fantastic shop.
It's a shame.
I hope, if they haven't shut yet, you can still buy Fatfish clothing from there. Oh, but have a look at the website, fatfishclothing.co.uk. You can buy some of the great camo t-shirts, some of the old school stuff, some cart printed t-shirts, and tons of other stuff. Polo shirts, hoodies, waterproofs. They do a big boy range, which I'm guessing you'll be interested in, Mark.
Yes, I am a big boy. Yeah. Also, did you see all the gift cards they do as well? They're impressive, especially this time of year.
No, I've not seen those. I've not seen those as yet. So you can, you can buy somebody a present if there's any. I know there are a few girls that listen to this. I've had some people message me on eBay and stuff looking for Christmas presents, Carpcast presents and stuff. They've been inquiring. Some people have been asking for stickers, so we need to get some of them done, Mark. I think we'll get some done for the angling show. You can also support the PAG as well on the Fatfish site, because the Predation Action Group, they have a wristband that you can purchase from the site, which I'm presuming the money goes to them to support the PAG, an organisation we spoke about quite a bit in the past. See, two Carpcasts ago, is it, where they released a statement about the otters, which is going to be benefit to everybody.
Definitely.
But yeah, all the headwear on there, you can fatfishclothing.co.uk. They do the hats, caps, beanies, all the usual stuff, joggers, and like you said, birthday, Christmas cards and gifts. fatfishclothing.co.uk. Have you seen anything on the net?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Well, after last week's on the net, as you see, I've put in the notes, let's all have a big group hug and just get along and stop slagging each other off.
Yes.
Let's not get like barbel anglers.
No, I've seen I've seen a few people on other posts, just random other posts, you know, have pops at each other, and life's too short. Life's too short. Like, we all love fishing. However we would like to enjoy that fishing, we should be able to, whether you fish well-stocked lakes, instant big fish waters, low stock lakes, day tickets, syndicates, hardcore lakes, whatever you choose. If you enjoy it, go out and do it.
Yeah, and I did see one post which, I'll be honest, it made me laugh, which insinuated that both of us two have fished garden ponds.
Yeah, I have fished Nash's Lake, which is known as a garden pond. I've fished that. And
I bet you enjoyed every minute of it.
Yeah, it's nice. I mean, it's a bit like holiday fishing, you know. When I've been to France and caught fish, I probably wouldn't parade them about the place. Might post it up on my Facebook, because I'm pleased that I've caught a fish. But, you know, I think when you go to that type of lake, it's like a bit like holiday fishing, isn't it? I can only assume, when the post said about both of us, I can only assume that they're talking about Cromwell. But Cromwell kind of is in someone's back garden, but it wasn't. The house was built after the lake. The lake was built, it's an 18 acre lake that was built for the gravel for the motorway, for the A1 that runs up alongside it. The house was built many, many years later. It's a spring fed lake that's been there about 60 years. So,
but yeah, I'd love that in my back garden. Although it did make me laugh, because I was in my bivvy at the side of Icombe, which is around 200 acres. Oh, bloody hell. What a back garden that would be.
I don't get...
Take some maintenance.
I don't get offended by anybody, you know, judging or not judging where I've fished. I mean, I've caught from some of the hardest low-stock lakes in the country. I'll go fishing where I go fishing. There's nobody going to have an influence on that ever. So I certainly not offended by any comments.
Yeah. It's all amusing, but like I say, just get along. I mentioned barbel anglers. Have you seen some of those that start to pitch in?
No.
I've seen more posts, people holding barbel, than other people saying, slagging the weight off usually.
Yeah, I mean, we can normally tell a carp's weight these days, can't we?
Carp are very distinctive.
Yeah, barbel. Maybe the barbel anglers can. It's barbel time of year, isn't it? It's a decent time of year for barbel now, isn't it?
Yeah, the... Again, man, round in tackle shop, the amount of barbel anglers through the entire river season is phenomenal, because also we're in Doncaster. We've got the River Don, which is chucking up doubles. I think the river record's about 14 or 15 pound. We've got the River Trent down the road. And, well, unofficially, I've heard fish, you know, barbel over 20 pound coming out. What the official record is, I honestly don't know, but there is definitely big doubles in there. And I'm going to get barbel anglers wanting to shoot me now.
Yeah, I mean, I've got some cracking barbel fishing on the Ribble near me. That's done, I'm sure the record's like 18 pound or something.
Wow.
It might. What is the actual rod caught record?
But it's around, I think it's about 21 pound. There was a fish in the Great Ouse called the Traveller that got ottered. I do remember seeing that one in the press.
Right. It might even, the Ribble one might even be bigger, actually.
Anyway, we're going to, this isn't the barbel cast.
No, but it's I think it's an interesting species that's probably more relevant to carpers than, say, perch and drop shotting.
I don't know. Do you think barbel could be the next perch?
They could be. They could very well feature on a future carper, not sheep, if everybody decides to get barbel rods instead.
Oh, I've got a good carper sheep for this one. Very, very apt.
Have you?
When we get there.
I think what we should do now is do our new feature, our girl power feature.
Oh, you're not going to start singing Spice Girls at me, are you?
I want to do it like Scrappy Doo. Remember Scrappy Doo?
I do,
Poppy,
yeah.
Poppy Power! I want to do it like that, but girl power. I'm not going to. We will get a jingle done. But for now, I would like to welcome our first guest. We'll put most male anglers to shame for a start. She's an extremely accomplished and serious carp angler. Miss Jo Green.
You seem to be, out of all the female anglers I've been hunting down and sort of following on Facebook, you seem to be probably the most serious out of most of them. You're always fishing like the, you know, like places I'd love to fish.
Yeah.
You go to Luke Moffat's quite a bit, don't you? Or have done?
I have been going to Luke's quite a bit, yeah. Yeah, I like Luke's.
And Thailand, is it Thailand? That picture on your profile, we got the. Have you fished rainbow as well recently?
No.
Oh, right.
No, that's rainbow, probably then. One that I won't fish.
Do you not fancy it?
Yeah. Oh, it's just some of the ethics of how to catch the fish sort of thing, casting, well, boating your rods out round corners and stuff like that.
Yeah, it doesn't appeal to you.
No. No.
I see you've been to Morocco as well recently. Here's pictures of nice.
Yeah, go out there every year from generally around the second week of December to the second week of January for a month.
Wow. Are you going this year?
Yeah, off the week after next. Yeah.
Oh, wow. How did that come about? How did you get onto the Morocco thing?
Well, I actually found an article in Carp World, it was. Let me think. 2007. And then I sort of stuck it on the bucket list and then eventually started going and gone every year since.
Is it a fishing-only holiday or do you do any visiting around Morocco?
Oh, no, just fishing. Yeah.
Wow.
Just fishing.
Was it? I remember seeing a piece from, I think it was Crowey that went over there. Was it years ago?
Yeah, it was. I was talking to Simon at the show about it because the Sandown show. Because every year he sees me, he says when he must be due to go soon. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I've got 10 questions here. Don't feel obliged to answer them if you don't want to. But I shall ask them anyway. General questions about being a female in kind of a male dominated sport and problems you might encounter on the bank, really. A general 10 quick questions. So first of all, what's your biggest carp, UK and abroad?
It's 49.12 in England and 84 pound in France.
Wow, that puts a lot of people to shame. That is it. Where's the 49 from?
Can't say. It was no publicity water. Sorry, Jamie. Right. Yeah.
Okay. I noticed you fish like the RK Leisure Waters and stuff as well, don't you? I wondered if it was one of the big ones out of one of their lakes. But yep, yeah, cool. And the 84th?
That was from Graviers, the brain fish.
Ah, what a carp that is. I've been a couple of times hoping to catch one of them big two. Unfortunately, I haven't as yet. What's your favourite venue?
Ooh, good question. English, definitely Raysbury. No.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. And abroad, probably Morocco. It has to be, really.
Wow, you're making me really want to go over there. weirdest reaction you've ever had from another angler, you know, when they realise that it's a girl, they've tapped on the bivvy and asked if they've caught anything. Have you had any weird reactions from other anglers?
No, they've all been really, really good. I'm sure that's probably due to the waters I fish. They're quite serious anglers on there, and I've never had any problems at all. No, occasionally I used to, but not anymore, not for probably the last 10 years.
Okay, anybody tried hitting on you on the bank, coming onto you, once they've realised, oh, it's a girl?
I have had that problem, yeah. Yes. Politely told them to go away or they'll get very wet.
Fair enough, yeah. It's interesting that for guys, like, it's definitely not a problem. If it was the other way around and a girl tried hitting on them, it's not a problem. But for women, it's a nuisance. It's an unwanted attention, I guess. But have you ever been scared night fishing on your own? Or?
No, not at all. No.
Never. Not even like Raysbury and stuff? Did you fish Raysbury kind of pre getting a bit more secure?
No, I didn't, but I still would have. I'm not worried at all. In fact, many nights last winter I fished on my own. No one else on the lake.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, even especially when I was younger, but there's the odd night where I felt a little bit uncomfortable, and especially on certain lakes. I was fishing a lake called Ransom Road in Northamptonshire a good few years back,
and
I never had one good night's sleep on that lake. You know, I was always...
Oh, no.
On there,
when I open. So
we can all be on them lakes and not feel good. Do you think female pheromones have ever given you advantage? Has there ever been a case where you've been just out fishing the guy next to you for no particular reason other than you think maybe it's just because, you know, a female touching the bait is the pheromones have given you an advantage?
I've never really thought that myself, but many when I've caught the big fish, they do say that's what it is. However, I'm not convinced.
No, I've took my girlfriend fishing many times and got her to put the bait on and stuff, and it doesn't seem to make any difference. But I've seen a few articles over the years about female pheromones, and you know they're supposed to, the fish are supposed to like them better, but
apparently
no,
but
no basis in science for it whatsoever. Maybe it's something we can ask Simon Scott that one.
Yeah.
Have any issues? I put here, how do you get on peeing in bushes? But it's the basic difference between guys that can go to the toilet pretty easily without thinking about it on the bank. And do you have any issues? You have to just make sure your timing's pretty good.
I've just had to adapt. Most of the places I go to have got toilets anyway, Horton and Raysbury and the likes. But a quick run if there isn't. When no one's looking, when it's quiet.
Okay. What about the reactions you get from like non-fishing girlfriends? Do they think you're crazy, or do they understand it now because you've always done it? Or
no, in fact, a lot of the men think I'm crazy. Everyone thinks I'm crazy.
Wow, because you are very serious, very serious angler. You know, you fish the lakes most people would dearly love to fish. So. So everyone,
I've been very, very lucky. Yeah.
Is there, have you got any girly habits that you can't live without on the bank?
No, none at all.
Nope.
None
just
at all.
Straight down.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Uh, and reactions from partners, you know, partners that you've had over the years. Do they fish? Do they mind? Or again, do they just think you're crazy?
He does fish, but I don't fish with him. I always fish on my own. Sometimes he gets a bit touchy, but he has got used to it over the years now, thankfully. It's only taken him 15 years.
Who's the best angler in your house?
Oh, well, he's a good angler, but yeah, his PBs are a little bit lower, bless him.
Yeah, well, I suspect there's 85% of the people listening to this show's PBs are lower than yours, UK and abroad. So it's going to be a hard task to beat. So you're off to Morocco in just over a week. I mean, what's your plans for next year? Yeah. You got syndicates lined up?
Raysbury, probably doing some time back on Horton again as well. Longfield Road Lake and abroad, Morocco again, definitely Thailand, possibly Graviers.
Yeah.
It's got to try and fit it all in somehow.
Yeah, I've got a Graviers trip, but we've never managed a decent week yet. We've always kind of managed the weeks nobody wants on there, so I have got one booked in probably about 2 weeks after they spawn, I think, which is normally where we end up.
Right.
But at least we've got suntan, so.
Yeah, it can get really cold over there. That's the problem.
Yeah. No, I've been in November, and that was cold. I've been in June.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure which I prefer, really. I've never been on the point yet, so. Which is obviously kind of where you need to be most of the time, isn't it? Where did you have the brown fish from?
Off the point.
Yeah.
Yeah, off the point.
It seems that is the peg to be on when you go. I mean, to the point of it's probably just best going in like a two or a three and just fishing off the point a lot of the time.
You can do, but the problem is there's always got to be a third person that's either possibly not going to catch or just not catch very many. I.e. the swim on the right.
Yeah, and I guess unless you dot the rods around, you kind of spread the rods between you off the point.
Go one for one, yeah.
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 Yeah, maybe. Well, then, thank you for taking time out of your busy work day, and I hope you have an amazing trip in Morocco.
I'm sure you'll see some pictures.
I'll look forward to it, and I'll post a link up on your Facebook when it's out tomorrow.
So there we go, we're going to feature one of those every week. If you would like to be featured, you don't have to have a library of fish as extensive as Joe, but you just have to be a keen female angler, and we will big you up and give you shouts on the Carpcast. So send us a message on Twitter and get your 5 minutes of fame. 21,800 downloads did we have this month?
Yeah, it's 21,000 and something. I think we would have had 23 if we'd have got it out on Friday last week.
Yeah, we lost we lost 3 days, didn't we? Yeah, we certainly lost a couple of thousand, because we've had like 1,800 in the following 2 days, haven't we? So I think we messed up that by me being late for work.
I was going to say we. You phoned in sick to stay fishing.
that is true.
Not that this is a job, but you never know.
So, now, what's next?
It is a story. We'll say, I hinted about, we see a lot of negativity about carp fishing. Let's talk about some of the good that's carp fishing. Now, this is a life saved on the bank.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah, it's a kid I know called Scott. He's just average carper like all of us. So, this happened a while back. I got him to write me a few notes down just to jog my memory of the full story he told me. But this is about 10:30 a.m. He started to pack his gear up, and he heard a chap in the next swim, an old fella called Tony, his alarm screaming. So, as you do, you walk round, give him an hand, and he got there, and the poor chap was hunched over on the edge of his chair, saying he's feeling a bit dizzy.
Wow.
So, his initial thought was, he might have just tried standing up a bit too quick, or it's woke him up. So, anyway, the fella asked Scott to deal with a fish, which we did. It was 18-pound mirror. Then Tony was still feeling dizzy, having cold sweats and feeling a bit lightheaded. He'd also been sick. So, you know, that's time to get a bit worried. And Scott did what, well, probably what anyone would do, but it wasn't anyone, it was Scott who did it. He phoned the ambulance. They came down after about 10 minutes, and that's had Scott, you know, running and opening the gate and showing them all where to go. They did some bankside tests, and they were quite concerned about his heartbeat, so off to hospital he went. Scott dealt with all his tackle, contacted, you know, the fellas, you know, found them, his wife, because they were from Grimsby, the Slakes in Lincoln. And I'm glad to say, well, Tony's doing well now, though it turns out he had a mini stroke on the bank.
Wow.
So, you know, big up to Scott for being there. It also makes you think, did the carp gods give him that run at that time to alert Scott to the problem?
Yep, it's very possible. Obviously, we wish him a super speedy recovery.
Yeah, well, the good thing is, you know, Scott got married recently, and, you know, Tony, the old fella, actually sent him a wedding card and popped a check in it for his gratitude.
Oh, wow.
You know, they've maintained contact, and, you know, Tony, he's 70 years old, by the way. He's on the mend, so I hope to see him on the bank down there myself.
Yeah, definitely.
Hope he gets back there.
We wish him a speedy recovery. Obviously, get well soon from the Carpcast.
And the kettle's always on an Icon.
I see you put something else here on the net about rod licence sales.
Yeah, this is something I've seen on the Angling Trust website. I'm just going to get it back up now.
It's on the net. It must be true.
Just while we're on the net, I've had... you're going to have to laugh at this one. I'll have to do it. Just let me get this back up. A message on Facebook from Cordelia Figaro, and it just says, "How are you?"
Do you think it's a girl?
I think it might be spam. Or should I reply, asking her to send me money?
Yeah, carry on.
But now let's get back to this Angling Trust.
Basically, it's about rod licence sales, isn't it? They're ploughing a load of money from the rod licence sales into more angling projects. And
yeah,
I think people are happy to see what's being done with their money, aren't they?
Yeah, to the tune of £200,000. Now, that is a lot of money and will go quite a way in helping, I think it's up to 50 angling-based projects.
It's not a huge amount of money when you're considering they sell £1.1 million at £28 a pop out of a £28 million budget. It's not chunks, but it's better than nothing, obviously.
It's a step in the right direction. I mean, you look, so far this year, the fund has distributed £115,000 of rod licence income to 31 projects. An extra £200,000 to 50 projects is more than doubled it.
Obviously, so, obviously, it's a good thing. We like to see where the money's going.
Yeah, definitely. We like to see it being put back.
Yes, certainly, if it can be ploughed back in, then obviously that's a good thing.
Yeah, and also, if you go to the Angling Trust website in the news, you know, if you are a club, there is details of how to apply. And looking down here, it's when I find it again, it's on about, you know, different projects. Otter fencing is mentioned.
It is or it so, isn't?
It is.
Ah, so you may be able to apply if you're a club for some help or some funding towards some otter fencing. Like we said in a couple of carp casts ago, some been some significant developments as far as the otters go.
Here we go. I found it with my Cumberland sausage fingers scrolling down. We've got excessive predation of fish by otters is an acute problem, jeopardising the future of many clubs and fisheries. To date, 3 otter fencing projects have been assisted by the Fishery Improvement Fund, which, to be honest, 3 is pathetic.
Funding well, we don't know how many have applied, do we? So, benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I see your point, but still, 3.
Mm.
But, yeah. Funding available for a maximum of £5,000 for each project, with preference given to clubs and fisheries able to complete fencing projects by April next year. The scheme is open to new applications. If that applies to you, go get it.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, we'd like to hear from you if you do as well.
Yeah, if you're in a club or a fishery and you apply for up to $5,000, then I would be interested to know how your application got on. I'm aware of a couple of lakes at the minute that are talking about it, that are probably going to put an otter fencing up in the near future. So if you can get $5,000 towards it from the Angling Trust, then I think that would be great. Get on the Angling Trust website, be able to see where you need to apply for that.
Yeah, I can see otters are one thing that, well, if they're in the area, it's not if, it's when.
Yeah, certainly, and they do seem to be in a lot of areas. There's a lot of lakes near rivers, and the rivers have been carrying the otters. So, obviously, I think in the future, you know, nobody's going to buy a new lake now or spend a significant amount of money stocking a lake without fencing it. I think, in 10, 15 years' time, you'll probably find that all significant, certainly commercial fisheries, will be fenced.
Yeah, that also reminds me of Danny Fairbrass's embryo project. That's something we need to cover, I think, as well. Maybe get someone from there on, because they do seem to have gone quiet, but I know they are working hard. They've got a fishery in East Yorkshire now, I know of.
Cool. I'll get speaking to them. Let's see if we can get a representative on. But obviously it's good that the rod licence money is being put back into fisheries, and if it's protecting stocks as well, then that is great. I think it's about time we got our second female of the show, Miss Bev Clifford. So hello and welcome to Beverly Clifford, live on the bank from Cromwell. How are you doing?
Not too bad.
It's wet, just to paint the picture. We've come down here in the nice and warm November. There's been two fish out all weekend, I think, and we're here on a Monday. So if you hear loads of scraping and screaming and buzzers going, then the miracle will have happened. We'll have had a bite. But at the minute, I don't think we've had a beep since we put the rods out, have we?
Yeah, apart from that swan that took you out.
Oh yeah, I've been swanned early doors, which is never good. They should at least train the swans to avoid the lines. But I forgot my buzzers. So always a good start to a session is to forget everything. So now I feel a bit naked. I feel like I'm not fishing properly. I made Bev use a cheating boat. We got the bait boat out there. I know you've had casting lessons recently, haven't you?
Yeah, no shame in using a bait boat.
No, it's the easiest way to put a load of maggots out. So, fishing maggots, we're on a peg called Windy Point on Cromwell, which is windy.
Yeah, it's living up to its name.
It's windy and wet and pretty grim. So, we're all wrapped up warm. Bev's trying out her Moroccan...
Thermals, yeah.
Which, what are you going to Morocco for?
Going trekking in the Atlas Mountains just after Christmas for a week. So we shut the Carp Talk offices for a week, which is nice. And I can get away, bugger off, and don't really have to worry about too much. So using that to its full advantage and going down to Morocco and go see what it's all about down there. So it'll be cold. I think when we get to Marrakesh, it'll probably be like 20 degrees, something like that. But then as we get higher and higher up, it'll obviously be snow-covered and very cold.
Didn't Crowe go to Morocco fishing?
He did, yes. He's got some fantastic pictures from there.
So, you not taking any carp rods with you?
No. I think Crowe had a quick look where it was he went to, and it's quite a bit further down in Morocco that he went. So yeah, it'd be a bit of a trek.
Were there no lakes in the mountains? Or
I think we're in like the high Atlas Mountains. I think there's the high, the low, and then something else. It might be like they might call in the east or something like that. But Crowe was quite a lot low down, and obviously it was a different time of year. So God knows what it's like in the winter at this time.
Have you been to Marrakesh before?
Never been to Morocco before.
I went once on a... I shouldn't tell you this, actually, because it might put you off. I went on a cruise round all the Canaries years and years ago, and it went to Morocco. And we stopped off. It looked quite nice when we got there. And then there were all these, like, taxis that were 30-year-old Mercedes parked, like, waiting for all the people coming off the cruise ship. And we got in one. We were kind of warned... to be careful. Anyway, we said we wanted to go into the centre of Marrakesh, and this taxi, 40 minutes later, it's still driving, and I know it's 10 minutes away.
It's driving round and it's, round.
No, it was going into the middle of nowhere. Like, it went out of anything built up and just down dusty roads, and we're now panicking, questioning the driver, where are we going? And he just didn't answer. He's just making noises. And we ended up at this, like, it was like a barn, really big barn, with about 50 other taxis in the line, people that have got shafted, same as us. And it was like a bazaar, it was like just like a market. And apparently that's just what they do. Wherever you want to go, you go there first.
They take you there.
They take you
and
there.
And make you pay an extortion amount of money to get back to where you need to be.
Yeah, and it's just basically a load of stuff. I mean, I actually went in there, I bought some drums. I used to collect drums from everywhere that I went, like little bongos and stuff. Yeah. So I did come away with something. I kind of felt I had to buy something, but there was just loads of people. There was just loads of people looking around going, what are we doing here? You know? In the same boat as us. And it was quite a big, like, barn thingy with loads of stuff in there, obviously all handmade. And then he eventually dropped us off in Marrakesh. When we got, this is the worst bit, when we got back in the boat, on the boat, we went for something to eat in Marrakesh Centre. And it's quite poor, there's, like, people washing in the streets, you know, like,
yeah,
in the gutters. Lots of beggars and stuff, which wasn't really nice to see, especially when you've just come off a nice cruise ship. But we met this couple that were English, got chatting to them in the restaurant, and this is where the story goes bad. I'm not sure I should say this. We were like, oh, you've been here before, type thing, just chatting. They were like, yeah, we come every year, been coming for 10 years now. All right, you like it? No, our daughter was snatched on our first trip 10 years ago. She was 4 years old and snatched, and they go back there every year and hope that they might see her, even though they don't know how old she is. Which, when Madeleine McCann went missing, one of the first leads they had was Morocco.
Was it?
Yeah, I don't know what happens over there, whether there's a trade or... I don't know, but kind of put a damper on, yeah, on Morocco for me. And every time somebody ever mentions it since, I mean, because it's really good for winter sun, like, I know, because I think the hotel complexes, some of them are beautiful. So, I know a lot of people go in the winter for, like, all-inclusive holidays.
I was going to say, I think they stay, like, within the hotel complex though, don't they? Apparently it can be a bit, like... with all the animals, and they have all the animals caged up and, like, doing tricks and stuff like that. Apparently that can be a bit not nice to see.
Yeah, we didn't see any of that. We literally spent the day and went back. But that little horror story, because I had a daughter that was blonde and 3 or 4 years old at the time, so it kind of put the heebie-jeebies up me. But I know many people have been since and had a really nice trip, but they've always stayed in, like, a really nice 5-star complex sort of thing in Marrakesh. They say it's beautiful. I think some of the architecture and stuff is supposed to be amazing, but you'll be climbing up a mountain anyway.
Yeah, I don't think that, hopefully there won't be loads and loads of tourists and loads of people sort of... I think it's quite bad for sort of, what do they call them, like, not lucky men, but people like that, just trying to pilfer money off you, like, give me money for this and give me money for that.
That's the impression I got, is everybody there is kind of there to take money off the tourists. Yeah. I mean, like I say, we've gone a 10-minute taxi ride, 40 minutes later, we turned up with 50 other taxis in a barn. It just kind of shows that they're going to take every opportunity they can
to fleece
to just try and get some money. I hope the rain isn't annoying you too much, because it'll either be therapeutic or Chinese water torture, because it's just decided to increase. It wasn't supposed to rain tonight, but on the bright side, it's probably not going to be icy in the morning.
Yeah, it was pretty cold up north this morning.
Up north, where exactly do you live?
Just outside of Hull, East Yorkshire. If anybody knows where Motorway Pond is, the Carp Talk offices are, about a minute away from there. And where I live now, in Brough, is about 10 miles away.
So it's proper North Yorkshire.
Proper North Yorkshire.
So
yeah.
I bet there's snow on the hills this morning.
Well, it's classed as East Yorkshire.
Is it?
Yeah. So it's classed as East Yorkshire.
Was there snow on the hills this morning, I guess?
There wasn't.
Wasn't there?
No, there might have been this weekend, but I was away this weekend, so I didn't get to see any of that. But apparently it was pretty grim weather this weekend, windy and rainy.
And a hell of a lot of carp fishing around there, for considering it is like North.
Yeah, there's a hell of a lot of carp fishing. People don't realise, because there's not like the massive huge fish like there is, you know, down south and, you know, in the peak places around that area, that there is a lot of fishing in Yorkshire. There isn't the huge fish, but they're starting to come through. You know, there's a lot of venues with 30 pounders now. You know, there's places like Willers, which has just got some phenomenal fish.
Yeah.
But you know, if you take that aside, you know, there's a healthy number of waters with 30 pounders. Some of them, you know, proper Yorkshire grown carp as well.
Tannery got loads of 30s in. Isn't it Tannery? On the whole.
Don't know if they're there anymore. There is still fish in there, yeah.
Then obviously the motorway Bigham was 40, wasn't it?
Yeah. My dad had, years ago, he had the Yorkshire's first 40 in the garden pond. It didn't grow in the garden pond, but he put it in our garden pond. And I didn't realise at the time, you know, as a kid growing up, I think, what was I, about maybe 9 or 10 when it died or something. To me, having a big calf in the garden pond was just normal. But you don't, now I realise, you know, I had Yorkshire's first 40 pound calf in the garden pond at home. You know, it was phenomenal, really. But
so for those listeners that don't know, your dad's Kevin Clifford.
Yes.
Well-known angler from a long time ago.
Yeah.
And he started, what's the actual company called? I mean, we all know Carp Talk. But
the company's Carp Fishing News Limited, which was just the company, but the name that they registered when they set up Carp Talk. My dad, Tim Paisley and Chris Ball, I think it was 21 years ago now. Originally Jules was meant to be involved, Julian Cundiff.
Yeah.
He sat in all the meetings when they were talking about it, and then right at the last minute that he decided it wasn't for him, and he was going to stick to his job. And so it was just the three of them that started it. And
I remember Carp Talk when it came out. It was revolutionary, really, wasn't it? To have a weekly news magazine that was just pictures of catch reports. Yeah. It was a big deal to get your picture printed in Carp Talk. I mean, were you an angler then when you put?
Well, it was 1994, so I was 10 when it started. I just remember stuff, because the offices were based at my mum and dad's house, because they had some old, well, they were old pig sheds, because it used to be a pig farm, and my dad had converted these to sort of offices and garages over the years. And I just remember, like, my dad, well, he was never seen to be around anyway, but I just remember him not being in the house at all, and there always been like people coming and going from these offices, and I used to go over there and my dad would be like, I'm busy, what now? Oh, alright then. And just like not seeing him. So, and then you remember sort of like the magazines being there on the kitchen table and things like that, and fishing had already been in my life, because he'd done a couple of other magazines before that I hadn't worked out. He'd done netting ponds with my mum. I mean, I grew up in a house that had stuffed fish on the wall. Yeah. We had a fish themed kitchen at one point. You know, fish was just always around us. But yeah, I just remember the business starting, and that was it. Like, if I wanted to see my dad, I'd have to go in after school and go see him in the office, and then you'd get told, I'm busy.
Never trust a man who keeps pigs.
Well, yeah, luckily that wasn't my dad that kept pigs, that was the people that had it before. But
there's probably a few dead bodies underneath those sheds.
Yeah, is it Snatch or Lockstock?
Yeah, yeah. Which one was it? Snatch.
Yeah, I think it is. Maybe it was my dad that kept pigs. He's known not to be friendly.
You'd always keep a couple back just in case.
Yeah.
In case you need them one day. So you were brought up with fishing. I mean, I remember seeing a picture of your dad with what I presume was you in a little cardboard box or something, or a basket.
I think that was down at Tylery, I think. And it was actually a cigarette box.
Right.
He used to have in Hull, there was the train station in Hull. My granddad used to have magazines, newsagents. He started selling magazines outside the bus station, sort of developed it into a little newsagent chain. And my dad used to still do the stocking for that. So we always had like cigarettes and chocolate bars around, so we always had the boxes. So they'd clearly been left in care of me, decided they wanted to go fishing. So taking me with him, put me in a cardboard box and give me a bunch of keys to play with.
I remember doing similar things to my daughter.
Yeah.
I just had to go fishing. I took her in November, December. We were talking about the story earlier of fishing on Far Fen with John Bannister and his weird and wonderful stories. And one of those trips, I had my daughter with me, ended up catching the biggest fish out of the lake. So I've got a similar picture. I think she's like five, maybe. So it's, yeah, it's not in a cigarette box, but it is me holding the big common that was in there. It's like a real fat thing. It was like 36 pounds. It's a really nice picture of her kind of sat by the boat. So yeah, that urge to go fishing for me, child or not,
yeah.
She had to like it and lump it, and yeah, it's, I think we were probably in the age of little video games and stuff, so I didn't have to give her a set of keys, but
yeah,
anything to keep her quiet for a bit. So, but when did you actually go fishing yourself for the first time?
We used to sort of mess around fishing in the garden pond. Because obviously it was there, and
so when you say pond, like was it like a little lake type thing? You could
there was the one where we had like some decent fish in it, and that was maybe, I don't know, maybe it sort of comes to, I don't know, half an acre or something the way it's shaped. But then there was like there's two like little ponds, and he used to keep stock fish in there because he's involved with Hull and District, so he used to hold fish for them, things like that. And, so we used to mess around, you know, flirt fishing in there, and just, I don't know, God knows how many times I fell in the thing as well, you know. It was just, you were just brought up in that sort of the outside, outdoorsy sort of world, and always mucking around in the water, and whenever there was something being dug or there was mud to play and we were playing in it, so fishing was just always something that was there. But then it wasn't properly until I'd stopped partying, because you grow up, you get to your teenage years, you find, you know, booze, boys and dance floors, don't you? And then, you know, then you find holidays to Ibiza and like living the high life and, you know, just wild ways. And it wasn't until I got out of sort of that that you're looking for something to replace that time with, and fishing was just obviously sort of the natural thing to me to sort of to go and do.
You'd already worked in the family business, so you'd kind of...
I'd been around it, yeah. It was, I think it was when I was 14 I first started sort of full days in the office. I'd always nagged for, can I have some pocket money? Can I have some pocket money? Well, yeah, you can do this, and yeah, I can do that. And I remember back in the days when we used to send the magazine to press, it was all done on like a film. And for colour pages, you'd have to print out like four layers of this film. And for the black and white pages, this is going back to the days when we had like black and white pages in the mag, there'd be just like one layer of the film. And all these pages had to be printed out on the image setters they were. And then they'd go to the printers and they'd make them up. But then they'd come back to us on like these massive, massive sheets. There must have been, I think there'd be 8 pages per sheet. And obviously, because they'd cost to print these out, we'd peel the adverts off. So you'd save the adverts, and then next week when that advert was going in again, you'd just send the advert off to the printers. So obviously it was the worst job in the world, but I'd do that for pocket money, so that was the first thing. So I remember like the first Chryston adverts, the first Richworth adverts, like Kevin Maddox's lake when he set that up abroad.
No, not with the pool, did he? He had one in France.
Yeah, but things like that, you know, things going back years and years ago. I just remember like peeling off these adverts and like matching them up. So yeah, that was probably one of the first jobs I did. Then when I went in at 16, when I'd finished school and I was working at college, I went in for that summer in between every day. And my dad had me doing the worst job in the world, debt collecting.
He's getting on the phone hassling people, yeah, for their money.
Yeah,
yeah, always the same non-payers, I guess,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, it was always the same people, yeah. I remember I made some friends that summer.
Are you going to name and shame anyone?
Well, there was a few people. I had Tony at Tony's Tackle, good old Tony Kirridge. I remember ringing him up, and I ended up at the time sort of losing him as an advertiser, because we'd had this discussion on the phone. I remember having to go through to my dad and being like, Dad, something's happened. He was like, what? I was like, I think I've lost Tony's tackle. He was like, what do you mean? Well, he said he's not advertising anymore. And he did in the end, and to be fair, Tony apologised to me a couple of years later when I eventually met him. But yeah, I always remember that, just thinking, oh God, what have I done?
So you, I guess like now you kind of put the pieces of the puzzle together from people you saw, like say on screens or pages, and
yeah,
or spoke to on the phone, and now you're kind of interested in fishing as a hobby.
Yeah, like, it's funny because obviously back in that time, everybody used to send the catch reports in sort of handwritten and printed out photographs.
Yeah.
And I think it was back in the days when I think it was the big mainline competition, and I think there was quite a bit of money up for grabs or whatever it was. And you'd have people sending, like some of the guys were sending in two catch reports a week, but I always remember the names of, there was Lee Merritt at the time, there was Dave Lane, and a couple of other guys, and at one point I could even tell you their addresses off the top of my head.
Was that the one where it was quite a big prize at the end
it
of
was,
the year,
yeah,
wasn't it? And one of the anglers was fishing, Dave Lane, wasn't it, fishing Strawberry Fields. He seemed to be catching a massive fish
that
every
might
week.
Be right, yeah.
And I think Lee was fishing, I forgot it was Lee Merritt actually, was yeah, the other guy. They were in, it was a neck and neck race all the
yeah,
way,
yeah,
wasn't it? Because every time, I forget where Lee was fishing, but I know Dave was on Strawberry Fields because it was around the time Chilli was doing his Keep It Real Echo,
yeah,
just launching it, and his best mates
yeah,
trying to win a 10k prize or whatever
it
was.
Keeping it real on Strawberry Fields, yeah.
Yeah, it's nothing against Strawberry Fields, no, but for those people that don't know, it's a lake. I think they were legally stocked foreign fish, weren't they?
There's I don't think there's any there's no secrets there. You know, they've never tried to be shady about it or anything like that. But
I think these fish were being introduced weekly almost, weren't they? At the time they were stocking the lane. Every time they put one in, they were catching it 2 days later. But then I don't know where Lee was fishing. I'd like to know actually, because where it was neck and neck, like
yeah, it was. I just remember these two and just sending, like, to the point where they were sending in like two a week. So I'd be putting them in the same envelope, and matching them up, and yeah, I could tell you their addresses at one point. It was that bad.
And what was the prize? It was at least 10 grand. It might have been more, wasn't it? I mean,
it was a big prize.
It's 10 years ago, isn't it? I guess nearly.
Yeah. Maybe yeah, it will be about 10 years ago.
Yeah, so 10k would have been, it was 5k or 10k actually, I can't remember. Yeah. But it was a significant amount of money then.
So yeah, there was all those names that, and just like random names like James Coleman, like he probably won't mean much to a lot of people, but he's consistently sent us catch reports year after year after year after year, you know, like, and he's never tried to be, you know, a big name or anything like that, but he's, you know, clearly a consistent carp catcher. Martin Wassell's another one.
Yeah, split like, shot. He's
just
tremendous angler.
Yeah, and funnily enough, like, through fishing, I've got a real good mate, Jason Ingley, and Jace is best mates with Martin Wassell and has been for years. But I never knew that until, like, once Jace mentioned him, Martin was like, bloody hell, you know, he sent us catch reports for years. Just, you know, never tried to be, you know, some big name sponsored angler, you know, never tried to make a living out of it. Just clearly just does it because he just loves going fishing. And, yeah, massive respect for those guys, you know, sort of they don't get the credit they deserve, really.
Yeah, I mean, split shot, Martin seems, I met him on Elstow first of all. He was on Elstow 2 and I was on there, and he was on Bundy's around the time,
yeah, was years ago, wasn't he?
Yeah, Mark fished there, which is moving on to your fishing a little bit. I'm going to ask you how the industry's changed and stuff in a bit, but it seems to me that in recent years, like, that's become a bit of a passion now. Like, you seem really keen to get out fishing. You've definitely fished more than me this last 2 years. So obviously you needed something to replace the party and everything, but and it would have been natural with your whole family kind of working in the angling industry, but for a girl to just drop herself in, you know, fishing circuit waters, you've been fishing carp matches, like, how's it been? How have you been? Is it weird? You never felt uncomfortable in what is a male industry?
No, I've never felt uncomfortable. I think because I've worked in the industry, and you maybe build sort of a tolerance, is maybe the wrong word to use, but you can get some weird comments and meet some weird people, but working in the industry, I've probably seen it all and probably heard more than some blokes have had to hear. It's just, you know,
so it's not
just,
new, you've already been through
normal,
that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just normal, and, you know, I've maybe become a bit of a lad through it as well. So going fishing on my own, being around, you know, guys on my own has never bothered me, but you do see girls coming into the sport and they find it a bit daunting, and I can completely understand why that would be. It is, you know, very male dominated, and it's, you know, you go to other industries and you meet the guys that say, some of my friends like work in food, or I've got a friend that works at the council and met her work colleagues, and they're not proper lads, they're just guys, you know, they're a bit girly in sort of many ways. You know, carp anglers are proper men's men, really, aren't they?
Yeah, working class kind
of. Yeah, you know, but to me it's just normal, but...
And because you're a Yorkshire lass.
Yeah, we made stuff up north, aren't we? So yeah, it's never bothered me. It's, you know, I'm not bothered by, I don't know, some people are scared of the dark, and one of my best mates, she's scared of the dark. If she's on her own, she won't sleep with a light on. She has to sleep with a light on. You know, stuff like that's just never bothered me. And I think because my mum and dad have always been, you know, never pandered to me, or if you've fallen over, it's been like, well, what's wrong with you? You know, so you don't get to be wussy in any way in our family. So, yeah, nothing like that's ever bothered me, and I've just got on with it. And if something does bother me, I think, well, don't let it bother you, just do it, you know. You've got one life, go live it.
What about rats and spiders and creepy crawlies?
Not bothered.
Does not bother you at all?
Don't like slugs. I've got a thing with slugs. Absolutely hate them. They're just pointless, horrible, mean. There's nothing worse than when you wake up in the morning and you look up and you've got slugs on the inside of your bivvy, and you just, oh, that is the one thing.
I trained my daughter to be pretty good. You know, she was naturally afraid of spiders and stuff, and I thought, if I'm going to take her fishing a lot when she's young, I need to get her out of that mindset. And she's not scared of anything now, because you know, tell her, you know, we need spiders because they get the flies, you know, they make the webs, and just.
But what are they going to do to you?
In
the grand scheme of things, they're not going to kill you. They're not going to suffocate you. You know, unless that you're in some bizarre foreign country, they're not going to poison you.
I need you to sit down with my girlfriend, tell her this. Because World War 3 erupts if there's a spider on the ceiling. Like, she's watching TV and there's something screaming, jumping up and down the sofa, and it's like, give it a rest. What's it going to do? You're a million times its size.
When I was younger, I used to try when I was at home. Mom, there's a spider. She'd be like, yeah, well, what do you want me to do about it?
I had next door but one neighbour. Bear in mind, she lives with a guy, right? She's got two boy children that were maybe 11, 12 each, and she lived with a guy, and they used to knock on my door, and there's a big spider in their bathroom. Yeah, and I had to walk past the guy. Like, I wouldn't be able to show me face, I'd have to go and hide in the garden.
You just wonder, how do you get through life?
Exactly. And they used to knock on my door to go and get a spider out of the bathroom and sling it out the front for him. There's three guys in there, including the kids and the woman who lived there. I was, like I say, mortified. What must he feel like? Like my missus has just knocked on a random guy's door to go and get rid of this spider out of my house. It doesn't make sense, yeah. So I didn't think you'd be able to be a successful angler without having a big tolerance of... nobody likes rats. I don't like seeing rats in the swim, but...
No, it's not nice when you've sort of... I'm not one for sleeping with the front on my bivvy either. I don't like that sort of enclosed feeling, or I just like to be able to see the water, hear the water properly, see your rods, just see what's going on, don't you? But when you get, like, rats or mice scurrying around under your thing, it's, one, the noise annoys you, and two, it's just like, go away.
Are you a heavy sleeper? If a little field mouse runs over the bivvy in the night, will you wake up or not?
I'm not a heavy sleeper, but if I am asleep, that wouldn't wake me up. Mm. But I wake up quite regularly. I'm just as I've got older, I don't sleep very well.
Have you ever slept through a take?
When I've been fishing with somebody, they've woken up before me, and I'm like, yes, I'm getting there. Just stop being so eager. Like, don't rush me.
So, you started carp fishing. When would you say you had your own like two rods, three rods, alarms and everything
probably,
else?
Probably, let me work it backwards, probably about 5 or 6 years now.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah, it was probably about 23, 24 when I properly sort of, right, yeah, let's get some rods and reels and let's start going. And to be fair, it was Cray putting a fair bit of time with me, and my mate Jace that I mentioned, Jace Ingley. I met Jace through going on some girls' trips to the Ebro with Pip and Jemima.
Oh yeah, I remember seeing you over there.
Yeah, that was probably how it really got me started. To like, yeah, let's, you know, give this a good crack. We said, oh, we'll go over there because we run the Cap and On show together, and we, you know, we kept getting people to say, oh, come over, you know, come on, come pay us a visit, girls. So we eventually said, yeah, you know, we'll come over, and we went over with Cap Master Tours to the Ebro. Did a bit of catfishing, and that was it. I was just sort of hooked, and met Jace, and they said, if you ever want to go fishing when we're back, when I'm back, you know, give us a bell, we'll go fishing. And I think we met up and we went fishing, I think it might have been Emmetland, up near me. Went there one weekend, and then I got offered an entry into the Catfish Classic, which was like the equivalent of the World Cat Classic. Ross Funny runs that, did the Catfish Classic, and did it on the Ebro, and offered me an entry. And with Jace being a guide on the River Ebro, I initially thought, well, who else shall I ask? You know, let's let one of you in with a chance, really, don't it? It's a competition after all. So I asked Jace. And obviously, I'd only been fishing with him a few times, but you get a, you can judge your character, can't you? And just thought, yeah, you know, it's a big old crack. And after that, we were just sort of inseparable, and just like, he is like a brother. He's, you know, a really good mate, and he's putting so much time with me and putting so much effort in, like, teaching me things and, like, persevering with me, because I'm not the easiest person to teach. And, like, they'll always be like, but why? But why? Why? And he always goes, oh, not now, Cliffy. He always calls me Cliffy, and he goes, oh, Cliffy. It's just like when you have those moments where you do things wrong, and like some people can get really frustrated with you, like, for God's sake, you know, just listen to me. And he just shakes his head and, oh, Cliffy. But he's really persevered with me over the years. And yeah, I've got massive respect for him, because I wouldn't have been able to put up with me at some points.
Did you win the match?
We ended up coming from, I think we were something like 20th on the last day, or 23rd or something, to 4th.
Wow.
We had a few fish on the first day. I think Jace caught the first fish, and then I lost a big fish, and then we had a few more decent, you know, smallish fish, but decent size, kept us up there. Then the second day, we had nothing, we blanked. And then our third day, it wasn't until the afternoon, we had, I think we had one fish, and then for the next 3 hours it was just constant. And Jace was doing all the rowing out. Me in a boat is just horrific, never mind on the Ebro. So Jace is rowing out, and he's got about 200-300 yards out across the river, and he's shouting at me, and he's like, tighten the line up. And I'm like, I can't, got a fish on the other rod. He's just like waving his arms at me. He's like, bless him, he was just rowing out, and I was just winding these fishing, and he's rowing the baits back out, and I'm winding other fishing. And he said, I just like, he said, I was absolutely broken. He said, I just dropped this rod, and he said, I just thought to myself, oh, I've just had enough. And he said, I saw you hit this rod, and he just thought, oh no.
That sounds like pretty good action. Like, as soon as he dropped one, another rod was going.
Yeah, it was. It was weird. But it's like anybody that's fished the Ebro knows, it's, you know, it's, that's, you know, it can just be like that. Like, you just get a flurry of takes, and it's just as shows of fish come moving through. And if they, you know, they come onto where you're fishing, you have it off. But your blessing was absolutely broken.
Do you prefer catfish or carp?
Carp.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, love fishing for catfish, and I like fishing the big rivers. That is, it's really exciting. Been over to Canada to fish on the Fraser River for the sturgeon.
That's, wow, you've done more travelling than me for fishing. I've been at it 30 years.
I want to get to the Amazon and places like that. It does really excite me, but it's completely different type of fishing. Some people say, you know, some out and out carp anglers just won't even entertain it. And I just think, well, you know, fair enough, each to their own, but don't knock it until you've tried it, because it is,
yeah,
like, out of this world.
Amazon and the Nile, you know, they're both on the bucket list, I think, for you know, the species, catch a big Nile perch, obviously, would be amazing. I don't even know what's in the Amazon, but there's catfish in there. And like big.
There's all sorts, isn't there? And I think some of it's like the smaller fish that you can catch. I think part of it as well, it's like, it's not particularly, yeah, catching the massive big fish is, you know, amazing. But like when we were on the Fraser River, just fishing in the backdrop that you're fishing in, you know, when you're looking at your surroundings, like the mountains around you, it's just phenomenal. Like, when you saw recently Ali and Daryl and that lot were over in Japan.
Yeah.
You know, the pictures from over there, it's different. You know,
it looked amazing,
world.
Didn't it? All the Korda guys. I think it's going to be a new TV programme, isn't it? I think.
Yeah.
A new thing.
Monster Carp, is it?
Excuse me. Yeah. And they've been to a few weird and wonderful places, haven't they? I've noticed recently. They went to Italy. I can't wait for that to come out. But yeah, just. I see some of these pictures, you know, some of those, like, they look like river pictures. I'm not sure where they are, but they've got, like, big mountains up, kind of up the side of the river, and some of them look super picturesque. I might do a bit of that. I mean, where else have you been? You've been anywhere else, like, that's not a UK carp water?
Been to the River Pur.
Where's that?
Italy.
All right.
Went for fish for the catfish, but the conditions were great. I think there was four of us on that went, and I think one guy caught on the first night. So then the last night we sort of said, oh, let's go fish for some carp. I think I caught one or two, only small things. But yeah, that's a phenomenal river. Like, anybody that's been to the Ebro, imagine something that's like twice as wide in places and like almost seems to be flowing twice as fast. It's crazy. In fact, I think when the Korda boys went over to Italy, that's where they were fishing a part of the river.
Right.
I'm not quite sure which part, because obviously, again, it's a massive bit of river. But
imagine Italian carp, like the typical de-bodied shape. I'm guessing in the river they're lean river carp, are they?
They're still quite well. You see, like, a lot of the Ebro carp as well, they're often quite deep set, long, with massive fins. They're like fighting machines, aren't they? It's a big dark world under there, and they've got to be pretty hardy to survive. So, yeah, they're.
Do you prefer fishing rivers to lakes generally, or? It just seems like harder work to me.
If you had to ask me if I could only do one type of fishing again, would I fish for river carp or lake carp? I'd probably say I'd fish for river carp.
Really?
Just because of the fight and the...
Yeah.
I don't know, they're just a bit more wild, aren't they?
And what about a catfish fight in a river then? Did you have any... What was your biggest catfish?
The biggest one I've had from the Ebro is 130.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's not particularly big by that standards.
You know, it's a big fish.
They go to like I think the biggest the record's 245, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, the big fish... But obviously they've got the flow of the river that helps them and things like that. But yeah, it's there's something about river carp that are just exciting.
Yeah, you never fancied like the couple of weeks in France in the summer, and they've got some big carp in the rivers there now, haven't they?
Definitely on the bucket list. And again, Belgium, some of the rivers over there and stuff, that looks pretty exciting.
Yeah. What European countries have you been then for carp?
France, done a bit in Italy, I think that's about it.
Yeah, I've only been to France, that's it. We've fished the canal in Belgium, and we used to, a little bit of smuggling and stuff, about 20 years ago, and we used to go across on the ferry 3 or 4 times a week, and we'd sleep on the side of the bank, sling the rods out, like, illegally. We didn't know how illegal it was then. Used to just sleep on the grass and get eaten to death by mozzies, catch nothing, and then try and drive through the border with some tobacco or whatever it was we had at the time. Many a day spent doing that, but I'm just getting into the foreign fishing now. I think that's where I can see myself for the next few years. But so you remember the Bundy Syndicate?
Yes.
Over here now, I mean, how often do you get out? Can you...
To be fair, this year I've been once. The year before, last year, I think I went 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
I had a couple of fish on one trip. I've not got my head round it. It's so deep.
Yeah, it's for that. Just, how deep is it for people that don't know?
I think the deepest part's 65 foot. If you're fishing in the shallows, you're fishing in like 30 foot. It's just bizarre.
It's 30 foot like a rod length out, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So the marginal shelf, what you're fishing in.
Like. I think there's like one or two swims where you can actually get waders on and like wait, like actually step in the water. The rest of it, it's just.
You're down.
Yeah, you don't want to fall in. Not at all.
It's weird, isn't it? I fished on there one, did a guest session one winter, but even things you take for granted, like putting a marker float out, when you're in 45 foot of water, just where your lead is and where your float is two completely different places, because when you've got 40 foot of line between, or braid between your lead and the float, like if there's any sort of wind or undertow, you can be 10 yards away by the time that it comes up. So like, how have you got on with like feature finding and stuff like that on there?
I've done very little, to be fair. This is what I'd like to get down there and like, because you can do a week session, and when there's nobody on there, like have a good lead around, you know, just sort of have a nice bit of water in front of you and find out what features are there and stuff like that. But when I often get down there on a weekend, there'll be like somebody like a couple of pegs round, so you don't want to start like thrashing around, just out of respect for the other guys that are there. And I know some people say, you know, you've paid your money, you can be there, but I wouldn't want somebody to come and do that to me if I just got set up and they start thrashing around in a load of water near me. And it just doesn't feel right to do it on there. Some waters you feel comfortable doing it in because you feel like you've got the space, but on there, you know, sometimes it just doesn't feel like you've got the space and you wouldn't want to. So I've gone like fairly softly with my approach. And the time that I did have a couple of fish, I'd just gone with a completely different mindset. And because I've read so much about the place, I think sometimes you can get a load of ideas in your head about what you should be doing and what you need to be doing. And the time that I did catch, I just went there and I think I'd put one rod out, and then I'd seen a load of fish boshing, and I thought, oh, I'll just chuck a rod on it, as you would do anywhere else. It didn't even enter my mind at the time that, well, yeah, that's in 30 foot of water, I just chuck this solid PVA bag out of it. And then sat back and I thought, well, what have I done that for? Because it's nowhere near where you've just seen the fish. Questioning it for hours, and anyway, I ended up leaving it and going to sleep. Next thing you know, so I think it was about 4 o'clock in the morning, it rattled off. Like, bloody hell, you know.
We've had other people on the show talk about fishing Bundys and other deep lakes, and they've done the same thing. Like, I've seen a fish show and then had a bite five minutes later, and thinking, wow, it's 50 foot or 40 foot between where I've just seen that fish. It's weird how they must acclimatise, even with like the water pressure from catching a fish off the bottom to playing it in and landing it on the surface. I mean, the fish have obviously got used to it. I mean, people don't believe me when I told them, but the birds can pick you up, can't they, in those depths?
The best one was when I told my dad that I'd got the ticking. It's not somewhere my dad had ever heard of, because he's completely out of sort of touch with the carp scene now, really. And was saying about it, he said, oh, what's it like? I said, oh, well, it's to 65 foot in places. He said, well, carp don't feed in that depth. I said, well, they do. He said, no, they don't. I said, well, they do. He said, no, they don't. And anybody that's met my dad will know how argumentative he is. I said, well, they do, Dad. Unless everybody that's fished there that said that they've caught at these depths is lying, well, they probably are. Said, do you know what I mean? Just like banging your head against a bit wall. I was like, well, Dad, just believe me, they do feed in these depths. And I remember catching those two fish. And he said, well, what depth did you catch them in? 35 foot.
wait till you tell him that the Tufties pick you up in 54.
It's not worth having the argument with him. Anybody that's met my dad knows that arguing with him is just like pointless, because he will go to, he'll just move heaven and earth to try and prove you wrong, even when he is wrong.
Just can't ever admit it.
Yeah,
sounds like someone familiar to me as well. I like a good debate.
My dad loves a debate.
Yeah, it's that I've told people about, you know, on Bundys. Like I said, I did one guest session there, but I saw a fish caught, and I got picked up by the birds, and I was fishing. I'm sure I was fishing in one of the deeper bits, one of the middle pegs, and it was definitely 45 foot plus, and I was picked up by a Tufty. A Tufty's the ones that go deeper than the coot. Yeah, Tufties go deeper than coots, don't they? Yeah. I was told it's impossible, but everything adapts, doesn't it? If that's
Your environment, you adapt to it, don't you?
It's not like they've got shallow water to dive in, because like I said, the margins are 30 foot, aren't they? So yeah, it's weird, and it's weird. I don't know, I mean, I spoke to a few people about, like, just because I like to feel a bump down when I cast a lead out. So casting lead into 60 foot, if you sink it on a tight line, it's not going to be anywhere near where it lands, so you've got no idea where to put the bait. Like, how far does your lead actually come in if you sink it on a tight line? I mean, is it 20 yards nearer? Is it 10 yards nearer?
I think some of them have, like, I've written down a couple of different people that have wrote it in articles that what they've worked it out to be. And there's variation in what the, I can't remember, I think Dave Lane's one of them that I've written down. I can't think who the other person is. And they've both, like, worked it out, but the workings are different. But you can't argue with either of them, because who knows? Like,
yeah.
It's just bizarre. I need to spend some serious time down there.
Depends on the weight of the lead, though, because obviously if you're using a light lead and sinking on a tight line, it's not going to drop as vertical as a heavier lead. So I'm guessing, like, you could work it out with a computer program.
I'll wait till somebody develops one then, yeah.
I'm guessing, I mean, the way I did it when I went there, and the way I would probably do it, is so I would count how long it takes to hit the bottom with a certain size lead.
I think that's what Dave Leonard worked it out.
And then, so if I knew it took, say, 20 seconds for a 4 ounce lead to hit the bottom, I would probably let it free fall for and count 18 seconds, and maybe for the last 2 seconds stop the line and let it tighten, or I'd judge it, you know, so that you got a point where you could actually feel let it free fall and then feel a drop at the very end. Because I like to know what I'm fishing on, you know, because when you find, like, feedy carp spots, like the spot that you're fishing out here, we're on a peg called Windy Point, which is windy at the minute, and raining, as you can probably hear, but it's like a deep silty spot, runs up the middle of the lake where a lot of the fish get caught from, and I cast a lead out there before, and, like, you just feel a nice tap 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 of gravel. It's definitely been fed on. Now, sometimes they'll only feed on that spot, and you could be 8 foot away, and they're not feeding on it, but you would never know which is the feed spot and which it isn't, unless you could actually feel the bottom. How'd you feel the bottom in 50 foot? So I think that's what I'd do. I'd let it free fall and stop it, like, whatever, 4 or 5 seconds before it hits the deck. At least try and feel. But then you've got 60 foot. If you're fishing 60 yards out in 60 foot, it's like fishing 80 yards, and the stretching the line at 80 yards.
I was just going to say, like, when I had the first take, it was just like, it was weird, just the first bit. Normally when you first hit into a fish, the way it feels is you instantly feel, like, connected with it, don't you? And you just, it was almost like, well, something's there, something's on the end of it, but it just doesn't feel the same, because it's so far away, but it seems to have a different power. And when you play, even when they get closer in, I don't know whether it's because they've got more water to, like, dive down, and they seem to dive straight down. And you don't really get that anywhere else, where a fish can dive straight down when you're playing it so, like, close to sort of netting it, and it just dives straight down. it just keeps going. Normally they're just going straight out in front of you, aren't they, to get away from you? They're going down, and it's like,
the closer you get in, there's normally nowhere for them to go, is there? They side to side, but
not like just go down underneath. It's just like, whoa.
it's
a different ball game.
So obviously you've worked in the industry pretty much your whole adult life, and now you're a keen angler as well. Have you got any sponsorships, or has it been easier to kind of get bits and bats?
To be fair, my dad's always tried to tell us to sort of not operate on the sort of basis of trying to get anything for free, because people will always want something in return, and unless you're willing to give a lot in return, then it's not worth it, you know, and you shouldn't go around asking for stuff on that basis. So yeah, I've been lucky enough to be given stuff, but that's up to that company's discretion, you know. And
Must have witnessed a lot of skullduggery, like working with carp, talking people lying about fish for competitions or to gain prizes. I bet you've seen all that.
It's ridiculous, and you probably see it in all sports, but it's maybe a little bit easier in catfishing to sort of lie about things because there's not the ability to check up on things. You know, if you say a fish has been caught at a certain weight, unless somebody was there to witness you doing it wrongly, then, you know, it's you're taking somebody's word for it. But some of the things we've seen over the years, like people photoshopping themselves into holding a fish when it was somebody else that's caught it. And
well, you're going to know that, aren't you? Because you're seeing everything that comes in, aren't you?
What people don't realise is, like, Paddy in the office, Paddy's worked for us since, like, I don't know, like, the first or the second issue or something ridiculous like that. He has seen it all. He can tell instantly, like, if a fish... You'll get people that have caught a fish in the middle of summer, then they'll send it in to us in the middle of winter... Or they'll send it to us, middle of winter's obvious, but they'll send it to us in autumn saying it was caught a week ago when there shouldn't be any leaves on the trees, but yeah. You know, everything's full green behind them. And you think, don't try and pull a fast one. Yeah, there's always going to be the odd times when one gets through because we're only human at the end of the day, but you know, don't try it, it's not worth it because we remember your name. And you know.
and with social media and stuff now, yeah. There's no hiding, is there? You're going to get publicly humiliated. Yeah.
Just don't try it, you know, it's. There's no... Everybody blanks, you know, everybody goes through tough spells, so just suck it up and, you know, get on with it. Don't try and regurgitate captures from 2 years ago. And
the industry's got so big now where, like, there isn't, like, life-changing prizes or anything, is there? Like, you know, I mean, I think there was a promotion when I caught my first ever 30-pounder. It was about 1995. There was a promotion in Carps. It was the first fish I'd ever sent in because... I think you got a bottle of flavouring from I forget which company it was now.
Something like Hutchie or something.
It was Hutchie or Maddox. It was one of them. I forget who it was, but I sent it in to get the bottle of flavouring. And obviously, because I'd read Carp Talk, like I say, it was a Bible at the time. And yeah, I've caught a fish that would get printed probably. Yeah. 30 pounders were quite big then.
They still are if you live up north.
Yeah, well, I'd say now there's 40s, like say, it's been 40s in Yorkshire. It was 50s now, really, with obviously Eric's and the North West has done 50 pounders now. So we're catching up to the South a little bit.
Yeah.
But I guess you see it all. I mean, you must know so much that goes on behind the scenes. And do you ever have to bite your lip and somebody tells you something and you know that's just not the case or the opposite?
Definitely. I think it'd be. You'd struggle to work in the industry and not be opinionated, and I think it's nice to be it's nice to have an opinion because I think you can be a pretty dull person if you don't have an opinion, but it's knowing when to voice your opinion and when to keep your trap shut.
Yeah, I struggle with that.
Yeah. All the lads that work in the office with me know that I am really opinionated. But I would never be derogatory about somebody else because I don't think that's fair. But you know, it's good to have an opinion, and I think sometimes people are too. I don't think my opinion's correct. That's the thing. I have an opinion, and I know what I like, and I know what I don't like, and I know what carp I think look nice. But I would never say that anybody else's carp don't count, and I would never say that that carp doesn't mean anything because every capture means something to somebody in their way. And I think that's what some of these people that go around. Sort of dissing other people's captures. It's not your capture, it doesn't concern you, you don't need to get involved with it, so just do the decent thing and don't put your opinion out there because you're only belittling somebody else. And is it really a nice thing to do that? Do you feel good about yourself when you go to bed at night knowing that you've, you know, been that mean? It comes back to that old thing that your mum said to you, if you've not got anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. You know, and it is so simple, isn't it? You know,
the thing is, like, carp fishing's kind of, you might look at this differently by, you know, having not seen behind the scenes all the years and being, like, female as opposed to male. I mean, males are very competitive by nature, you know, we kind of have to compete genetically for women to procreate, for everything like that. You know, it's why men are extremely competitive in sports, and fishing's one of them things. It's almost like a way of life, isn't it? It's people are obsessed by it, and I guess that brings the worst out sometimes.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. And you can be competitive and still be nice. Like, yeah. You know, you look at other sports and you look at, I don't know, sort of football, for example, you've got the people that have done really well in football and been the nice guys, you know, that have had fantastic careers by being labelled the nice guys. David Beckham, for example, made a phenomenal amount of money out of football. He's played at a phenomenal level. Some people can't stand him, some people love him, but you can't take it away from him. He's a nice guy, you know. And then there's the people that have been not so nice. They've still made a career out of it, but they'll always be remembered as being an arsehole. And I know which way I'd rather be remembered. Somebody that promotes something in a positive light, gets people into the sport, you know, somebody that kids will look up to and parents will want their kids to look up to, rather than somebody that's really negative. Seems to, sometimes you look at some of these people spouting off on Facebook and you think, are you actually even happy? Do you wake up in the morning?
No, they're not.
No, I'd hate to be that person. But
yeah, it's nice to have a positive outlook, but I mean, you must have seen it change even more since social media came out. I mean, you were doing a magazine where printed media was kind of all you were told. You know, there was no TV shows about fishing, there was no radio shows. It was literally the only news was Carp Talk, which you were working at. And now, like, Carp Talk can be the cause of it. People can have pictures put in the magazine, and then everyone's got an opinion on how he caught it from the out of bounds, or he caught it from the snags or somewhere.
But this is the thing, this stuff was always going on. It's not like it's been anything new. You know, people have always caught fish by, I don't know what you want to call it, default or bending the rules, you know. People have always caught fish, you know, those ways, or people have always told porky pies, or they've always, you know, this stuff's always gone on, but it just gets put out there to the masses and often made hell of a lot worse, or just, it's not even cause for comment sometimes, like you know, catching fish from the out about the thing with, you know, Miles recently, like, so many people have caught that fish in the past,
the
in same
fish
situations. But
everybody's never had a legal capture that fish, not
but,
one,
you know. And look at the big song and dance that was made of it.
Well, he got took to court and fined. So,
and it's just ridiculous. I mean, Paddy, that works in the office, was made a great comment. He said, "Yeah, but if you look at it, in, you know, what it cost him in court and stuff like that." He said, "I'd think that fish was worth that." You know, and you think, "Well, yeah, probably."
They used to say that about the Black Mirror that lived in Colmere, sadly dead now. But there's a few people got fined. You know, £1,500 maybe for fishing there over the years.
Yeah.
Got caught. I mean, how much are you going to pay for a top syndicate?
Some people spent 10 years to catch a fish like that out of a top syndicate. It's going to cost you more than that.
Yeah, exactly. We are not condoning law breaking there at all. But yeah, it's the fact that everyone's got an opinion once they've done it. And secretly, I think these people would have liked to have caught the fish themselves. And that's what brings the negativity out, isn't it? It's jealousy, because you know, I mean, you must know within the industry, how many actual full-time paid anglers are there in
that are paid full-time to go actually fishing? I think there's about one, isn't there, or two.
Terry Hearn probably.
Terry Hearn, yeah. The rest of them actually have to do other work. Yes, they may be employed by a company, you know, and people see that, you know, well, they're just going fishing. Well, no, they have to write articles, they have to turn up for shows, they have to do this, they have to do that. You know, they have to do a whole host of things that they probably actually wouldn't really want to be doing if, you know, push came to shove. But I think Terry is the only one where Terry just does as, you know, Terry really wants, and they're happy to support that. But, you know, Terry's had to sacrifice so much for that. You know, he's not got the family life. He's, you know, he's not gone on holidays here and done, you know, other things, and, you know, he's literally given up everything to be that person, you know. And so he thoroughly deserves it. But I wouldn't want to be living on the bank that amount of time and been that, you know. He's a
pretty secluded, that was my next question there.
Yeah, secluded, sheltered, you know.
Do you think you'd ever get the fish? So, okay, so at the minute it's May's coming, which is probably the best month for fishing. It's the start of May, and the girls are going to Ibiza for a week, or you can go and do 3 weeks on, I don't know, Savé.
I've done a beaver, I've got my t-shirt, and I'm not rushing back.
No, so you would yeah. choose fishing.
Yeah.
Okay, would, so yeah. take that a stage further. You're obviously a pretty serious fisherman. I mean, you've fished more than me in the last 2 years, and you get that adrenaline when the buzzer goes, you know, it all goes into panic mode, just the same as me. So, I don't know, do you ever see yourself where you could do 12 months on the bank, or would you want to go full time for a year, or could you do it?
No, it would just be, I'm a firm believer in like a little bit of everything, like everything's a fine balance. I would lose myself in that, and you'd probably be able to like fine tune, you know, what your aims are and things like that, but just to be on the bank, like, I don't know, you can't get a Costa on the bank, can you?
I've lost jobs in the past because of like some people lose jobs because they don't want to go in on a Monday morning after a weekend party or whatever, and you took so many. In fact, I did it when I was young. I think I was 19 or 20, and they called me in the office one day. They worked out I'd had something like 31 Mondays off in the 12 months. I'm like,
there's a recurring pattern here.
Yeah, I've not showed up for, I've been sick on Mondays more days in a year than I'd turned up. And I lost a job, but I've also lost jobs usually Thursdays when I've been fishing. Went out to work Thursday to Sunday, and I've just had to have that extra day on the bank, you know, like, and then, you know, every 2 weeks it turned into to nearly every week, and, you know, usually ends up in you letting someone down because you just had to be there because you can't miss a day on the bank. You don't get that urgency to
some of my girls, like the girls that are some of our best mates, I'll probably say she would, because I've sacrificed like weekends with them or things that they've been doing, like, well, I'm going fishing, and like, it probably looks a bit shady to them, but you've only got so many weekends in a year, and like, I like to do like go running, so that takes up some weekends, and I like to do fishing, and then I do try and, you know, schedule some time for them, and then I recently decided it might be time to have a boyfriend, you know, so trying to schedule that in, you know, it's a balancing act, isn't it? And then you have to work some weekends, so, you know, it's fitting all things in. But I'm sure the girls will say yes, I do sacrifice them for fishing.
I'm trying to picture a conversation between you and your boyfriend of, sorry, I can't see this week, I'm going fishing.
Oh yeah, it does happen.
that's usually the other way around. I take it he doesn't fish, or does he fish?
No, he does fish.
Right, so he understands.
He understands, yeah.
I was going to say, because that is generally a conversation that goes the other way.
No,
normally badly.
He's quite understanding. I've tried in the past, a guy I was seeing a couple of years ago now, and it didn't last very long, and the reason it ended was because I was going fishing
and he didn't believe you.
For the next 3 weekends, and he was like, well, I don't think you're very serious about this. Well, I said, well, no, I want to go fishing, you know, I think I've just got a Bundy stick at the time. Well, I'm going fishing for those first few weekends, so I won't be able to go fishing again after that. And he ended up chucking his toys out of the pram, and I just, I've not got time for arguments, so that was that done.
There's a few lads, definitely, because I mean, you would not expect, like, guys' sports are generally guys' sports. There's not many women got an interest in, you know, cars or you know, all the stereotypical sort of guys' sports. As you said, you've had a different upbringing, probably been a ladette in
the, just brought up around,
you know, being around with the guys, but it's still a funny conversation, you know. So sorry, it's your boyfriend, I can't see, I'm going fishing. He's like, are you lying? Let me see the fishing rods, I don't believe you. Okay, you mentioned the running just then. I mean, that's kind of a test of your character, because it's not normal running, is it? It's not like I've just decided to get fit and go jogging for a couple of miles every day. It's not even like I'm going to do a half marathon. It's not even like I'm going to run a marathon. You're running 100 and something miles in 24 hours, aren't you, soon?
Well, I'd like to do it in sort of just somewhere over 24 hours, but I don't quite know how long it'll take me. I've just, about 3 weeks ago, I'd been training to do a 60 miler, so tick that off the list.
60 mile, like two and a bit marathons, right?
Yeah, 60 miles.
Okay, just think about that for a minute. Two and a bit marathons, and you're about to start training for one that's double.
Yeah, well, it's not quite double, 110 miles.
Right.
So if anybody's aware of like the Cleveland Way, which runs from Robin Hood Bay to Whitby, it's like one of our national trails. Mm. So it's, yeah, it's, there's a 110 mile race on there. So
a 110 mile race. So you're running for over 24 hours.
Yes.
Pretty much non-stop.
Yes.
I'm assuming you have to eat, drink.
Yeah. Wee. Poo. Possibly be sick. Possibly have a sleep if necessary.
While running.
While running, yeah.
Wow. So do you wear a nappy? Or do some of them?
Some people should. I did the whole marathon earlier, well no, September, and there was a girl that had clearly had an accident, and she was passing quite a lot of people, but I just always think, look back and think, yeah, she's going to be the girl that she ran past quite a lot of people and everybody going, oh no, she's pooed herself. Because it was all down the back of her legs.
Oh my god. Didn't what's the most
Paula Radcliffe
do it on the London Marathon,
she stopped, yeah.
She squatted in a drain or something.
Yeah.
I guess you're running for 24 hours. Well, so like, how do you eat? What sort of things do you eat? Well, because you're gonna need extreme energy, aren't you? Like carbohydrates.
Yeah. Some people like will eat like pork pies and like just whatever you fancy, basically. When I'd done the 60 miler recently, that was like my first step up to anything over. I think the most I'd run before that was only like 35 miles in one go, so it was like completely new territory after I got past that. So you don't really know what's going to happen with your body, because you can't really train regularly on those distances, because it takes such a lot out of you. So I thought I was just going to like want like flapjacks, and like you can have like energy gels that are just like carbohydrate gels. I thought, well, I'll just go through on those, because I'd everything in training and marathons and stuff I'd done fine on those. But when it got to the day, it was so hot and I was just so beyond wanting to eat that I didn't really want anything. But you know, you've got to eat. So there was fruit at the aid stations. My other half was there, and I knew he had a load of tangerines that he was sort of eating during the day. And like every time I saw him, I was like, "Can I have a tangerine?" And then like right near the end, you end up like clinging onto these little herbs and stuff, and like you're really looking forward to something at the next aid station. I remember seeing, I was like, "Can I have a tangerine?" He was like, "No, I've eaten them all." You know, your heart sinks, and you're like, "Oh, that's all I wanted." It was like, "Well, what else can I have?" And then I think it was like chopped up melon or something, which like it doesn't seem like much to go off, but I think your body gets so good at running on so little and like things like that, that you know, a little bit of melon and you're off again, you know, and skipping on for the next 5 miles. And
if you treat yourself like you've seen the programs and stuff about the London Marathon, and you get the wall at like 20 something miles. I mean, on a 110 mile run, where's the wall? How many walls are there?
You're gonna go through a few.
You treat yourself, I'm gonna have a tangerine in 10 miles.
Yeah, it becomes like the little things then. You like they say you have to break it down. Like, so if you go out and think, wow, I'm gonna run 110 miles, like it's just, you're gonna get phased. So you're just like, right, let's like do the first, whatever works for you, like do the first 5 miles or the first like 10 miles. So there's like aid stations along the way. So like most people do it as like, right, let's get to the next aid station. You have a bit of a faff, reevaluate everything, like let's get to the next aid station. Like sometimes you can be feeling really shitty like between one aid station and the next, but by the time you've got to the next aid station, you've forgotten, you know, the tough time you were going through a couple of miles back. You've had some water and, I don't know, some jelly babies or whatever, and you trot on happy as anything, and it's all forgotten.
Wow. 110 miles up. How have you spoke to people that have run that far?
Yeah.
And what's the recovery afterwards? I mean, are you in a wheelchair for a few days?
I think everybody's different. I think like the first time you do something like that, like you can often suffer pretty badly. But yeah, it all comes down to like how well you treat your body afterwards, what you eat. Some people just recover better than others at things like that. And I think the more you put your body through demanding things like that, the quicker your body learns to recover. So I was quite lucky after the 60 miler. I'd been doing some heavy training. I'd put in a lot of like back-to-back like long running over weekends. So I recovered pretty well. Like I didn't sleep very well on the night. Like that was horrific. But the next day I got a good night's sleep, and the day after that, I was hobbling around the office circuit.
Hobbling?
Yeah. You sort of like get a funny walk because your legs are real stiff, so.
It takes me 5 days to recover from a hangover now, so.
Oh yeah, hangovers, that's completely different.
you take a recovery in 100
hours. Longer to get over a hangover, yeah, than it does to doing a long run.
Well, the rain's getting noisier, we've still not caught a fish, and we've been over an hour, so I'm going to finish with 5 questions.
Okay,
very quick ones. I'm going to add an extra choice to this first one because I saw what you were drinking before. But tea, coffee, or hot chocolate?
Oh, I would always used to say hot chocolate, but I've only discovered coffee in my life about like 6 weeks ago, and it's got to be my new favourite thing.
It's a drug, isn't it?
Yeah.
We need to get onto the bulletproof coffee with the what's the butter they put in it? There's a special type of butter, but yeah. It's supposed to be really good for energy and stuff, yeah, as well. Best Dunkin' biscuit.
Best Dunkin' biscuit, Hobnob.
Okay, chocolate.
Yes.
Oh, good chocolate Hobnobs. Probably my favourite biscuit.
Yeah, they're a good biscuit.
Tight or slack lines?
Tight.
Have you ever fished with folded reel handles?
No.
I'm fine.
Have I ever fished with straight level reel handles? No.
Okay, and the final one, the topical one. Who do you fancy in a fight, Holmesy or Daryl?
Oh, Daryl's probably got the height advantage.
For those of you who don't know, we've been sat here having a little giggle at Facebook. That's why we were talking about the social media carpers before. There's been a round two, I would say, of Daryl, yeah, versus Holmesy. Seems to have kicked off on somebody else's post about absolutely nothing, but the knives are out, and yeah, I'm sure Mark and I are going to be discussing this next week, or probably last week from when you hear this. Yes, Beverly Clifford, thank you very much, and let's hope we catch some fish.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, big thank you to Beverly, somebody who's significant in the industry generally. I had an enjoyable night's fishing. She cooked a mean chili, which always goes down well. So, carp aren't sheep.
Carp are not sheep.
Winter is crap. It is not the best time of year, which some people are claiming, because the banks are quiet. They're quiet for a reason, because the muddy, the sludgy are horrible, and the fishing is crap. The weather is crap. You're not going to catch fish off the top, or very rarely, very, very rarely. You can't go stalking. There's 23 and a half hours of darkness, or that might just be up north. Mm. It's crap. Roll on April.
So why a carp, not sheep?
Because I've seen a couple of people on Facebook saying, winter is the best time of year, I can't wait. No, it's crap. You can't walk around in flip-flops.
Yeah, but I appreciate what you're saying. I've not seen too many. Anybody that says winter is their favourite time of year is clearly lying. Because it's nobody's favourite time of year. I agree. I mean, there was one year where I looked forward to the winter. One year ever, and that was when I fished the Yateley Car Park Lake, which was, for those that don't know Yateley, there must be a few of you because it's not been in the press in recent years. If you've started fishing the last 5 years, maybe you don't know about Yateley Car Park Lake, but it was home to 9 of the most famous mirror carp in the country, including Heather the Leather and half a tail, 250 pounders, and all the other fish were 40s apart from Uglo and... in fact, the other one that wasn't 40 did go
early tail. That made 40.
Early tail, yeah, it made 40 that back end of that year I fished it. So, and Uglo was 37, real character fish. So, I mean, it was a ridiculous stock in the lake, but it also attracted every decent full time angler in the country. The year I fished it had everybody on there. John Mack was fishing it full time, Terry Hearn, Daryl Peck, who was working but was there a lot, and more importantly used to beat me down to the lake every week. Basically it was like 9 of the, it's like a 7-acre lake, and there was like maybe 14 pegs on it. the top nine pegs were gone every week, and then there was like three kind of pegs worth fishing that were up for grabs every week, and probably five anglers going for them every week. And Daryl always used to grab one because he got there on a Sunday, where I used to DJ Sunday nights, couldn't get there till Monday. That sets the scene of Yateley. There's a million people going, you talk about Yateley all the time, but we appreciate there are some people that may not be aware of carp angling's mecca, or former mecca. Still a fantastic lake, I think, with a load of 40s in, but not obviously the place it once was. Now I think all the originals have gone now. But that year, as there were so many people fighting for the same pegs, they made it 48 hours after that year. But that year, the first time I actually felt like I was angling was the winter. I can truthfully say I felt like I was fishing. I reveled in the winter coming, and caught one of the two fish that I caught out of the lake that year, which was single scale at a PB weight of 44 pounds, which is my PB at the time, so I was extremely happy. And it did feel like, even though you were grinding out for maybe one bite all winter, that's kind of what you were doing anyway in the summer, but not in good pegs, you know, feeling like you were getting last pick every week. At least I was blanking with kind of being where I wanted to be, and then did end up catching one. But yeah, you're right. Carp are not sheep, anglers are, and winter is generally pony. Have you ever come across a really good winter water?
Yes, but I'm not talking about it.
there is one that's been already been featured in Bev's interview, which is Bundy's. It fishes well in the winter because it's 60 foot deep in places, so there's a window when other lakes shut down where that fishes really well, and that's kind of like that January, February period. But what happens when they fish deep lakes is they generally start off slower than other lakes, so it's a bit of yin and yang. But yeah, a winter ticket on Bundy's was never a bad thing to have.
Yeah, now my only January 30 comes from Bundy's, a swim on there called the RAF, which was down, well, not the deep end, it was the even deeper end. And the bad thing about that fish is I moved onto fish that were showing. Then my thought process at the time was, well, anywhere else you'd move on to fish and cast at them, so I'll just do exactly the same, even though they're showing, you know, 50, 60 foot above where my bait's going to be. You know, in less than an hour of casting like a double PVA'd stick that was also, you know, soaked in dip down to the bottom, it didn't rattle off, it just kind of like pulled down. And the fight was even weird because it was, you know, a hard dogged fight, as you'd expect from a fish. It's weighed exactly 30 pounds, but it was like you were bringing a cod up, not a carp. You were playing a fish up, not in.
Yeah.
But yeah, wonderful experience, and it was absolutely freezing. I remember playing it, my hands were actually hurting, it was that cold while playing the fish.
The Elstow Lakes fish well in winter as well, don't they? Again, they're, you know, got average depths of over 25 foot, and I've had fish out of pit one and pit two. In the cold months. Oh, no, I've had a fish out of pit two in the winter. Yeah. No, I haven't. No.
I've had takes out of pit two as late as December. But again, they're slow to wake up.
That's right. The my first session on pit two was middle of February, and both the 40s had been out the previous week. That's right.
Yeah, I remember that. Both at 43 as well. I mean, they were some tremendous captures.
Yeah.
But another thing that makes excellent winter waters, if you can find a lake that's got a regular inflow and outflow, like a constant movement of water, that does make a lot of a difference. The oxygen will generally be nice and high. If the water is moving, well, the fish have got to expend energy to just even stay still.
Yeah, definitely. And fish that are not lakes that are not weedy as well, I think is a decent indicator for a good winter water. But generally, you just need a lake with a load of fishing. that's the long and short of it. You need a well-stocked lake.
We need an overstocked garden pond.
That's exactly what we need. Wonder if Kev will let me on the lake. He wants to record. We're going to get him on for our 1-year anniversary edition, and which is going to be in January. And if I get one opportunity to fish down at his lakes again, I'd rather it not be in January. So, but beggars can't be choosers. We will take our scraps.
Yeah, if your scraps a mid-60 or whatever's lurking down there,
yeah,
you ain't going to shake it off.
I'm not sure if he'll let us fish the cops. You never know. You never know. But
don't turn your nose up at his church. That's not exactly devoid.
No, there's no mid-60s, though, yeah, unfortunately. No.
Only mid-50s.
Yeah, kind of. Kind of. Is that us done for number 24?
I think so. I've got a long listener's questionnaire from a lad called Ross, but what we'll do, I think we'll pass it on to the next one, then we can do it justice, because it's quite a long one.
Certainly. And don't forget, you can buy tickets for the Northern Angling Show. We released the lineup on last week's show. Yeah, it's a fantastic lineup. Matt Hayes and Mick Brown being headliners, but there are loads of people. It's on the 20th and 21st of February, which is not far away now. That's getting pretty damn close. We might have to start doing some work. But yeah, under 12s go free. You can buy tickets online, cheaper than the door. And the lineups are fantastic. There's Ali Hamidi and Dean Macy doing the big fish off, which will be airing by the time that goes out. Alan Blair doing his Urban Banks. We've got a few of the top match guys like Tommy Pickering, Andy May, Paul Garner does his underwater stuff, and he's doing a drop shotting special as well. So if you are getting out drop shotting this winter, then some of his tips. Rob Hughes as ever, Mark Holmes is going to be there. And we're going to be there. Oh, it's Crowy as well. Crowy's going to be doing a slideshow from stuff from his new book, which I still haven't finished and I still love.
You know what? That is, I've finished it, and it is only the second ever book I've actually gone back and started reading sections again.
Really?
Yeah, the other one was Silence of the Lambs.
I did it with, when I was fishing Colmere in Shropshire. I did it with Terry Hearn's chapter on Colmere.
That is probably one of the best carp chapters ever, that one.
Yeah, I read that chapter so many times while I was fishing Colmere.
If you ever think there's a carp out there that won't eat a boilie, read that chapter.
Yeah. If you do want to purchase Crowy's book, you can do so at giftsforanglers.co.uk.
You can also get carp-shaped pillows.
You can get a carp-shaped pillow, yeah. And I have to say thank you to Bev. I've been trying to hook myself up a carp-shaped pillow for some time, and she brought me a little one. It's the baby one, but I now am the proud owner of a carp-shaped pillow. Big thanks to Bev and giftsforanglers.co.uk. So they're certainly worthy of a mention. But do yourself a favour and get Crowy's book, because it is I've seen it described as a modern classic, and I would certainly agree. It's got so much.
I can't argue with that. It's certainly inspiring.
Yeah, it's definitely. I shall be finishing it, but I've read quite a bit of it now, and I do like it. I don't read many books at the minute unless they're poker based. But yeah, Crowy will be at the Northern Angling Show. You get tickets at northernanglingshow.co.uk. I think there's some of the VIP packs left as well, which are basically you get a discount on like the Fox Pan set or a set of Nash Alarms, and you basically get, it works out, you get a free ticket and you get to buy the goods cheaper than you can buy them in a shop. So there's still a few of those left of various different companies. There's a CC Moore one, a Fox one, a Nash one, and many others, but yeah, get down. Matt Hayes and Mick Brown, us, the Carp Cast Live, we're going to be there as well. We're going to be doing some hosting of the main stage on the Sunday. We'll have our own little stand down there. You'll be able to purchase a few Carpcast goodies and basically come and say hello to us. And we're going to be doing loads of interviews at the show as well for future Carpcast content. So northernanglingshow.co.uk. And if you haven't yet got one of my knowledge DVDs, then you can get them on eBay.
just follow search, the link below.
Yeah, there'll be a link below, or just search The Knowledge, Jamie Klosik, anything like that. And please stop making offers on them. eBay have done something daft where instead of just buy it now, it's best offer. So I keep getting offers like 50p less than what they're up for, or a pound less than what they're up for, or £2 less than what they're up for. It just wastes my time and yours. If you're going to buy it, just buy it. But I've, out of general principle, will decline any offer. You can offer one penny less and it will not be accepted, I can assure you.
I thought I was tight.
Yeah, no, it's I don't know why eBay have done it. They've changed all the buy it nows to best offer, and it just wastes my time. So now I'm going through, like, you know, I might have a dozen envelopes to write. Oh, I have a pet hate. I've got a new thing to moan about. People whose addresses are longer than four lines. If you've ever typed a number, like sometimes I'm doing 12, 14 envelopes at a time, which you would not believe how long it takes when somebody's got A&B Engineering Co., Unit 17, blah, blah, Industrial Estate, Ferryhampton Road, Ferryhampton, East Ridings of Yorkshire, Yorkshire, HU4, no! No, I would not move there if the address was that long. I would not. It does my nothing. And it can't only be me. If you ever sell anything on eBay and end up writing a lot of stuff out, you will know my pain. It's kind of bittersweet because, you know, everyone I write out is, I'm earning a tenner. But, oh my God, it drives me mad. So by the time I've got 12 of them to write out, and then I've got to, before I can do anything, it keeps flashing up, you have an offer, you have an offer, you have an offer, just buy it if you want it, do not put an offer because I will not be accepting it.
But will you accept an offer from me if I go online and make an offer now?
No. Yeah, I will, because you wouldn't have bought one anyway. I know you're trolling me, so yeah, I'll make you pay the £4 whatever you can offer.
You do realise when this goes out, people are going to flood you and make you silly offers.
Yeah, I guess.
You are going to be punished beyond belief.
Yeah, I've set myself up for some eBay trolling, haven't I?
You have, yeah. But,
yeah, it's cool.
We're near the end, but before we go, while I remember, I just want to say thanks to Jason Theobald. Listen to my chat with Ian Russell, where, you know, we spoke about Heathrow bait service he used to run. I mentioned the Pucker Pineapple pop-ups. He still had some lying around and he sent me them, so thanks, Jace.
Yes, free pineapple pucker pop-ups.
Yeah, I think they may have seen bitter days. You know, they're certainly old, but, you know, it's a proper throwback Thursday, that one. It's Thursday today.
You need to catch a cast carp on them.
I do. I'm going to have to find a... where is it? We're going to have to poach a garden pond, catch a little koi.
And the yellow pop-up, a little ghosty. Cool. Yeah. Right, well, that's us. We shall see you next Friday.
Bye-bye.